Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Your Inescapable Love by Layla Hagen. Narrated by Sebastian York and Lydia Dornay. Chapter 1. Max. 19 years ago. Why is there a girl in our yard? She's just stepped through the gate and looks around, holding a backpack in her arms. Mom is in the kitchen with my brothers, and I probably should call her, but I won't. I can take care of this. I'm 9 years old. I run to the gate, and as I get closer, I recognize her. She's the new girl in my class at school, Amelia Campbell, who always looks like she's going to cry. I overheard one of the teachers say her mom died before she moved here. Probably why she's sad. No one should lose their mom. What are you doing here? I ask her when I reach the gate. I live 2 houses away, she says quickly. But I lost my key and I can't get in the house. I live with Grams, who is working now, and she's usually not home until 7. I left the window to my room open and I tried to climb in, but I couldn't. I fell, and now my knee hurts. Wow.
I don't know many girls who would climb through their window.
My sister Alice does, but Alice is cool. I decide that Amelia Campbell is cool, too. Graham says I'm not supposed to tell anyone that I'm home alone, but I can't get in, and I don't know what to do. There is a storm coming, and I hate storms. I'm afraid of thunder. You can wait inside our house, I say. But I don't know you. Amelia Campbell has long blonde hair. It's almost as blonde as my sister Pippa's, but shorter. Yes, you do. We have class together. I am Max Bennett. Amelia Campbell, she says. I know. I heard the teacher call your name. You're the new girl who doesn't play with anyone during recess. She looks at her boots, and those are some butt-ugly boots, pink, with even pinker hearts on it. I open my mouth and close it again, remembering my sister Alice saying people don't like it when I tell them their things are ugly. And Mom said I'm not supposed to say butt. I don't play with anyone because I don't have any friends. She's weird. How are you supposed to make friends if you don't play with anyone? Maybe it's a girl thing. I'll never understand girls. A few drops of cold water fall on my face. It's raining. Let's go inside my house. Mama says it's bad to be out when it rains. We'll get a cold. She looks at the house behind me and then back at me. Are you sure your parents won't be upset? No, they let me and my brothers and sisters bring friends all the time. She looks down at her ugly-ass boots again. But I'm not your friend. A loud sound cracks above and she jumps. She looks at the sky with wide eyes. Boy, she really is afraid of thunder. You are now. I want to be your friend, Amelia Campbell. And I will protect you from the thunder.
Chapter 2. Amelia. Present day. Please, please, please let us have some hot rock star or actor on the list with new patients. My best friend Abby stands behind the reception desk, staring intently at her computer. Anyone interesting? I ask her. This is one of the most sought-after physical therapy clinics in San Francisco. As such, we often work with high-profile athletes who must recover after an injury, and even the occasional celebrity. In the case of the latter, it's nice to get a scoop beforehand, because sometimes paparazzi show up. While Abby surveys the list on her computer, I make a mental note to stop at Target on the way home and buy a box of cheese crackers for my grandmother. No matter how bad a day she's having, they always make her happy. Because she has Alzheimer's, most of her days are bad lately. Watching the strong woman who raised me slowly fading away is excruciating. Nah, Abby shakes her head in disappointment. We've had a dry spell with celebrities lately, just more businessmen. I grin. Ah, yes. We also get the assorted businessmen who decide all of a sudden that their lifestyle is too sedentary and they have to incorporate training into their routine. They sometimes overdo it, which is a recipe for injury. Look at this one, she says with a laugh. Went skydiving and screwed up the landing. I cover my mouth with my hand. That's not funny, Abby. He could have been seriously injured, I know, but he wasn't. I mean, he needs therapy, but his ligament injury isn't too bad. I can't help laughing when a hothead decides to be adventurous and then screws it up. You're a bad person, I say, shaking my head, making fun of others' misfortune. I need to fill my free time with something. Judging and gossiping fit the bill. Have you tried reading or cooking? I challenge her. I've heard they can be fun.
Nah, too much work.
Who is he? Forgot the name. She focuses her attention on the computer again. Max Bennett. Hey! The name sounds familiar. Max, but are you sure? I ask, my heart suddenly doing a somersault. The name is not exactly uncommon, but still. Yeah. What's his date of birth? As Abby rattles off the date, I grin, because it's him. Two different people sharing a name and a birthday would be too big of a coincidence. He's my Max. Come on, I told you about him. I admonish her when she raises an eyebrow. My neighbor when I was a kid. Oh, I remember now, Abby replies. He was so much more than my neighbor. He was my best friend after Mom died, and I absolutely adored him. I haven't seen him in 15 years, though, which is about 15 years too long. Can you assign him to me? Your schedule is already full. Can you shift one of my other patients to someone else? You could do that for your best friend. I bat my eyelashes at her, certain I look absolutely ridiculous. Fine, I'll see how I can shift things and let you know. Thank you. See you tomorrow. I leave the reception area with a pep in my step. Smiling, I remember the 9-year-old boy who used to walk next to me to school, as if he was my own personal bodyguard. He made it his mission to make me smile when all I wanted to do was cry because I had lost my mama. Grams and I moved to Montana when I was 13, and Max and I didn't keep in touch. The boy I knew wasn't a hothead. Sure, he had his fun and never backed away from a challenge, but I wouldn't have pegged him for one to skydive. Miss Henderson, the last patient I had today, exits the clinic at the same time I do. Her husband waits for her by his car, and after kissing her cheek softly, opens the door for her. The look of awe and love in his eyes warms my heart. At the same time, it makes me aware of the unease that took residence in my chest months ago. Since I was a little girl, I wished for the kind of love the Hendersons share. But some people aren't meant to have happy endings. My parents didn't. And if the unused wedding dress in my closet is anything to go by, neither am I. My fiancé, Paul, canceled our wedding 3 weeks before D-Day. That was 6 months ago, and part of me still can't believe it. On my way home, I stop by the store and buy the cheese crackers for Grams. Suddenly, I have a burning desire to talk to Grams about Max, but I'm not sure if she remembers him. On some days, she doesn't even remember me. I resolve to test the waters when I get home and see how she feels first. Armed with crackers and a giddy happiness, I turn up the volume of the music in my car, pull my shoulder-length blonde hair up in a ponytail, and then wrap my jacket tighter around me, shuddering. My car's heater died a few weeks back, and I don't have the money to fix it yet. I earn a good paycheck as a physical therapist, but paying for rent and a caretaker for my grandmother eats up most of it. Grams's pension helps with her medical bills. Drumming my fingers on the wall to the rhythm of the music, I drive away. 30 minutes later, I walk inside the house, and Miss Adams, my grandma's caretaker, greets me.
Thank God you're home.
What happened?
She's not been herself the entire afternoon, and I haven't managed to calm her down. You're in for a rough evening. I honestly think it would be easier for you if she were in a home.
The muscles in my back tense, and I roll my shoulders. I found a senior home a few hours away from San Francisco that would be cheaper than a full-time caretaker, but putting her in a home would just break my heart. No way. I'll manage. Where is she? In the backyard. I'm going to her. I bought her favorite crackers. Thank you so much, Miss Adams. Have a nice evening.
See you tomorrow, Amelia.
After Miss Adams leaves, I walk outside. Our backyard is small, but full of flowers and plants. The back of the house also has a porch painted in dark green, with a couch and a swing. Grams is sitting on the couch, a vacant expression on her face. She snaps her head in my direction, leaping to her feet when she sees me. My grandmother is 61, but her body is still sharp and quick. She always used to say, "Age is just a number.
and it ain't catching up with me.
Her silver hair frames her heart-shaped face. Violet, you're home, she exclaims. I blink back tears. Violet was my mother's name, but I've learned it's best not to correct Grams. It just makes her confused and anxious. Grams loved my mama dearly, even though she was just her daughter-in-law. Mom got pregnant with me at 16. Her own parents kicked her out of the house, so Grams, my dad's mother, who was a widow, took her in, and the three of us lived with her. Then, after Mama's funeral, my asshole of a father decided parenthood wasn't for him and disappeared off the face of the earth. Never saw him again. It's just been Grams and me ever since. Holding up the package, I say, brought you crackers. She tisks, shaking her head. Don't come home so late again tomorrow. You know what they say about girls who come home late, and I won't have anyone speak ill about my daughter-in-law. I press my lips together, hating that my eyes are stinging with tears. I rack my brain, trying to come up with a way to bring Grams back to present day without upsetting her, when she surprises me. This house is beautiful, Amelia, darling. I'm so happy we found it. Me too. I like our yard the best. It's so peaceful. Grams doesn't say anything for long, painful minutes, and when she speaks again, she shatters me anew. I received a call from your principal today. He said you got into trouble again at school. A knot forms in my throat. There she is, slipping away from me again. Sometimes she mixes up people, sometimes time periods. It's an emotional roller coaster. Let's have dinner, okay? I ask in a strangled voice. I finally coax her into eating dinner, and afterward she showers. Just before she gets in her bed, I comb her hair, the way she did for me while I was growing up. The worst thing about her illness is that it's episodic. Some days she's her old self, some days she's unrecognizable. After she goes to sleep, I pour myself a glass of wine and go out in the backyard, stretching on the bench. As I sip from my drink, my phone vibrates with an incoming message from Evelyn. She's my other best friend and also works at the clinic. She's not a physical therapist, but a psychotherapist. Some of our patients need that therapy in addition to the physical one, especially if they suffered grave injuries or their careers have come to a halt, as is the case for professional sportsmen. Evelyn, a friend of my sister says she might be interested in buying your wedding dress. I gave her your number. Oh, something painful twists in my chest at her words. This is a good thing, I tell myself. I need to get rid of it, and God knows I can use all the money in the world. Amelia, thanks. Evelyn, you can celebrate getting rid of it by starting to date already. You know what they're saying about plenty of fish being in the sea? This reminds me of a joke I read recently. Chuckling, I type back. Amelia, yeah, and I live in the desert. I'm getting used to the idea of lifelong celibacy. I'll buy some cats. I love my life. Some days it's hard. Some days it's downright painful, but what the heck? I have two great friends, my Grams, and this piece of heaven I can call home. And I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but the childhood friend I've missed like crazy for years might just pop up in my life again. If that's not a sign of great luck, I don't know what is. As I fiddle with my phone, I notice a message from Abby. Abby, I shifted one of your patients to someone else. Max Bennett is all yours. Giggling, I take a sip of my wine. I might be taking a lifelong break from dating men, but reuniting with my old best friend couldn't have happened at a better time. Chapter 3. Amelia. My first appointment with Max is Monday of the following week. I pace up and down one of the training rooms, looking over his file for the 100th time. He has a posterior cruciate ligament injury, a slight tear. He didn't need surgery or require crutches, but he needs a rigorous therapy to get that ligament back in shape. I'll make sure he'll be able to kick anyone's ass by the time our sessions are done. The three other therapists in the room smile at me encouragingly, concentrating on their own patients. The clinic has 10 such training rooms, and up to 5 patients and their individual therapists can be in one room at a time. I wish Max and I could be alone so we can catch up, but that will remain wishful thinking for today. My stomach is in knots as I glance up at the clock. 2 minutes left. I first met Max when I was 9 years old. Mom had died, and Grams and I moved a few houses away from the Bennetts. I went to the same school as the Bennett kids and quickly became somewhat of an outcast, which was entirely my fault. I was shy, awkward, and grieving. Since I had buried my mother, I had retreated into a shell. Max pulled me out of it. When Grams and I moved to Montana 4 years later, I was devastated. I glance at the clock again before returning to the file, sighing. 1 minute left. My palms are sweaty, and I wipe them on my pants, but the fabric of the spandex training gear isn't absorbing anything. When I hear the door of the room open, I snap my head up from my file. Max and Kurt, the head of the clinic, are in the doorway. Kurt is talking, but Max isn't listening. His eyes are fixed on me, and his face breaks into a smile, instantly transporting me back to the day when he offered me his first smile. With hurried footsteps, I walk toward them, inspecting Max from head to toe. The last time I saw him, he was 13 years old and a whole head taller than me. Now, he towers over me. I've inherited Grams's petite frame, sure, but Max must be at least 6 feet, and he's just magnificent. Broad shoulders and strong arms, his dark brown hair is tousled and sticking out in every direction. His face is a mix of panty-dropping masculinity with a dash of that boyish charm I remember about him. Max Bennett is all man. I stop less than a foot in front of him and Kurt. Max pins me with his gaze, and his smile deepens. Oh, God, I forgot about those dimples. As far as I understand, no introductions are needed, since Abby said you already know each other, Kurt says. I open my mouth, but find my throat too clogged with emotion to form words. We do, Max says, and his voice doesn't sound quite right. It's deep and strong, with just a slight hint of nervousness. She used to be my best friend. Well, I'll leave the two of you, Kurt says. Amelia will take good care of you. Of course I will, I say, having found my voice again. Kurt nods at both of us before leaving. The second the door closes, Max pulls me into a hug. I walk into his arms without hesitation, even though there are 6 other people in the training room. He hugs the same way I remember, wholeheartedly. But then again, there weren't many things Max the boy did half-heartedly, and I can't imagine Max the man to be any different. I can't believe this, he murmurs against my hair. I always wondered about you, where you were, what you were doing. I wanted to look for you, but I didn't know where to start. He rubs his hand up and down my back, sending sparks of warmth down my spine. Pulling out of his arms, I say, I, on the other hand, knew where you were all this time. I moved to San Francisco when I started college, I didn't know how to reach out. Ah, it's a good thing I was a blithering idiot then and had the accident, he exclaims. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Gives a whole new meaning to everything happens for a reason, right? I smile at him, surprised to learn that he kept his self-deprecating humor. Reading in magazines about his family's success always did make me wonder if he'd changed or if he'd become more arrogant. So far, it seems not. I wonder how his siblings turned out. There are 9 in total. Sebastian, Logan, and Pippa were the older trio. And as far as I understood, they set up Bennett Enterprises, one of the biggest players in the jewelry market. Max and his identical twin brother, Christopher, also work at the company, but I don't know what the other siblings are up to. Alice, Blake, Daniel, and Summer. Can't wait for Max to fill me in. How did you manage to get yourself into that mess? If I make up a heroic reason, will you believe me? I burst out laughing. He cemented his status as my hero one lousy rainy day after school. We were walking home when we heard howling. After sloshing around in the mud for a few minutes, we located the dogs. They They were on the edge of the road, next to a ditch. I counted 4 pups and what looked like their dead mother. The pups desperately tried to get a reaction from her, pushing their little heads against her belly and one of them licking her nose. I felt such an instant kinship with the pups who'd lost their mother that I couldn't bear leaving them to fend for themselves. As Max and I bent to lift them, we noticed a 5th pup. He'd fallen into the ditch, which was very deep and narrow. Without hesitation, Max jumped inside it, pulling up the pup. It then took him nearly 20 minutes to get himself out. Grams and his mother, Jenna Bennett, nearly went into cardiac arrest when we returned home with 5 pups and covered in mud. I hero-worshipped him from that day on. I know you can be a hero, all right, but the skydiving accident is in your file. He groans, then tugs with his teeth at his lower lip, and I can't help admiring his lush mouth. Had his lips always been this full? And why, in the name of all that is holy, am I having these thoughts? The training room suddenly feels too small, as does the distance between us. I never took you for the skydiving type, I continue. I'm not. Just made a bet with Blake. I was flying with a trainer and still managed to crash land. At the mention of his younger brother, I can't help grinning. Damn, I have so many questions for you, I don't know how to get them out fast enough, he says, pretty much describing my current dilemma. I hold up a finger, but we need to start with the session. Kurt warned me that I should keep the relationship professional during our sessions. Max cocks an eyebrow. What did he think I'd do? Jump your bones the moment I saw you? Heat rushes to my cheeks at his words, and I lower my gaze, suddenly flustered. Thank heavens we're far enough from the others that they can't hear us. I see you still put your foot in your mouth every chance you get, I inform him. I do, but that came out wrong. I didn't mean there's anything wrong with jumping your bones. In fact, you filled out beautifully, Jonesy. He grins at the use of the nickname his brother Blake gave me years ago. He found Campbell to be quite a mouthful and said I looked like someone who should be called Jones, which was completely random. Max turned that into Jonesy, and it became my nickname in the Bennett household. As your oldest friend, I'm allowed to say that without sounding like a pervert or like I'm hitting on you. You are beautiful. He utters those last few words in a lower tone, and damn, it makes all my lady parts tingle. You haven't aged too bad either, Bennett. You wear a suit well. I volley back, though my skin is simmering. Teasing each other was one of the backbones of our friendship, but now it feels different. Max wears a gray suit, and he wears it as if he's been born into it, which couldn't be further from the truth. I saw him running around in jeans or shorts and simple shirts our entire childhood. But there is something about him in a suit that is absolutely irresistible. Now, go change into your workout gear so we can start training. The changing room is over there. I point to the door at the far back of the room. Be right back, he says. Pity we can't get away with changing in front of each other like we used to, isn't it? I shouldn't blush at his words. I really shouldn't. But I do anyway. No, we can't. I let out a slow breath when Max disappears into the locker room. As kids, Max and I often went swimming at a nearby pond. We discarded our clothes in front of each other and remained in our undies, and there was zero awkwardness. Except that memorable summer day when he hid my clothes while I was in the water, and then he accidentally dropped said clothes in the water. I threw a fit and pushed him fully clothed into the pond. We made up as we walked home later, both looking like wet rats. It was all so easy between us back then. Now? Well, we aren't kids anymore. Seeing each other after all this time is bound to lead to some awkwardness, and apparently tingling in places I have no business tingling. I'm so immersed in my thoughts that I don't realize Max is back until he calls, "Ready whenever you are, Jonesy." Holy chocolate cake with whipped cream on top. Right. Max in a suit was irresistible. But Max in shorts and a form-fitting shirt is sinful. We'll do a combination of mattress and machine exercises, and also aquatic ones. Obviously, no aquatic ones today. We'd have to be near a pool for that. Oh God, I'm rambling. I blame his impossibly dark eyes and tongue-in-cheek smile for it. For how long will the therapy last? I'd say 4 weeks, twice a week. He groans, dragging his palms down his face. Lucky one of my oldest friends is my therapist. Will give us lots of time to catch up. The words oldest friends snaps my mind out of the gutter. Friends don't ogle each other. Serves me right, I suppose. How did Blake convince you? I inquire. The boy I knew didn't take such risks. I've become dumber with age. He does one full turn of the room. So, with which of these torture instruments are we starting? They're not so bad, I assure him. They look like regular gym machines, except creepier. Well, I'm all yours. Tell me what to do. Why, Max Bennett, I never thought the day would come when I get to boss you around. That was your role. He shrugs, but the mischievous smile on his face tells me he hasn't given up his ways. Your gym, your rules. The rest of the session passes quietly as I do the exercises with Max, patiently explaining every move. Let's go out to an early dinner, Max suggests at the end. No can do. I have two other sessions. I can pick you up later then? He pushes. After work is generally a bad time for me. Taking a deep breath, I admit. Grams has Alzheimer's, and it's come to the point where she needs a lot of supervision. She has a caregiver during the day, and sometimes a lovely neighbor helps out in the evening if I have seminars, but I like to spend the evenings with her. I'm sorry about Grams, he says gently, especially since she's so young. Yeah, Grams is 61. She had dad at 18 and became a grandmother at 34. I always liked her, except when she took you away to Montana. It's hard seeing her like this, I say in a small voice. I'm used to her being this strong person, and now she's just... Anyway, I spend evenings with her. Sometimes I read to her or just rattle on about my day. Max raises his hand to my cheek in a soothing gesture, the way he did when we were kids. Only now, his touch doesn't bring me reassurance, but also a wave of heat. She does remember me, most of the time, I say softly. Do you think she'd remember me? You're a hard man to forget. Even as a boy, you made an impression, I say with a grin, which fades when my next patient walks through the door. Oh, crap, my next appointment is here. About your leg, you don't have much swelling, but just in case, put some ice on it when you're home. Will do, boss. See you on Thursday for our next appointment. He leans down to me, his lips brushing my cheek. The light touch sets my skin on fire. I take a deep breath, inhaling his masculine scent, and all my senses go hyper-alert. This is ridiculous. We were once best friends, and I hope we can be that close again. Lusting after him is out of the question. I have an unused wedding dress and years of dates gone bad to remind me that my romantic relationships always take a turn for the worse. I want Max Bennett in my life, and I want him as my best friend. Swallowing hard, I wave at him as he leaves the room. I was expecting our reunion to wreak havoc on my emotions, but not my hormones.
Chapter 4. Max. Thank you so much for coming with me, Alice says as she climbs into my car. I parked in front of a restaurant which is located high on the Twin Peaks. It's highly successful, and I'm damn proud of her. She's been scouting for a location to open a second restaurant and asked me to go see a place with her. She shoves a takeout bag in my lap as I gun the engine. You brought me a turkey sandwich? I ask, unwrapping the sandwich in record time. Yep, can't let my little brother starve. I scoff at the word little. I'm only 1 year younger than you. Christopher and I are firmly convinced we were the accidental pair of twins. But then again, I'd bet my ass a lot of us were accidental. On the drive to the new location, I tell Alice, you're never going to believe who I ran into today. Amelia. She's my physical therapist. Alice frowns and then she exclaims, oh, Jonesy? Our neighbor way back when? That's the one, I say. How is she? Didn't get to talk to her much. We had to start our session. But her Grams is sick. She has Alzheimer's. Alice sighs, sinking down the seat a little. That's so sad. How's Jonesy holding up?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?